Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and this week's online video picks are up on our website. Each week we select five web videos, and I anchor them on our site in a picks video. This week's picks include 40 great speeches from the movies in a minute and 12 seconds. See how many of the movie clips you can identify. This is a fun minute and 12-second ride among our videos at WNYC.org/video. And artists like Dan Zanes and They Might Be Giants have turned children's music into a booming business, but some grown-ups would like to throw those catchy tunes into the diaper pail, wouldn't you? On today's Soundcheck Smackdown, a debate on the rise of kids' music coming up at 2 on 93.9 FM. WNYC. Now, we've been doing a lot on the show recently about how different sectors are being affected by the recession. Today, we'll continue to mark some of these uncommon economic indicators with a look at the world of design, particularly how it reflects tough economic times now and in the past. So with me is Michael Cannell, former editor of the House and Home section of the New York Times and founder of thedesignvote.com. He sees a brighter future for design, funnily enough, as the economic outlook dims. Hi, Michael.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you wrote that article in this week's Week in Review section of the Times titled Design Loves a Depression. What's to love about a depression?
Well, you know, my first thought was, that design has enjoyed this incredible run over the last 10 or 20 years. Design has really become almost a obsessive topic for our culture. And for many of us, design is how we've expressed ourselves. The home renovation, the kitchen renovation is the way so many Americans, abetted by low interest rates, have engaged in design. And in a way, that was the modernist dream, was that all of us would be able to participate in design. And my thought was, you know, my God, what happens now? Does all of this go away? But I don't think it does go away. I actually think that there's potential for it to be a really, really positive development for design. And part of the reason I think that is that modern design flourished, if you think about it, modern design flourished in the 1930s. Modern design played an incredible role in helping Americans to adjust the way they live to the new realities of the Depression.
Give us some 1930s examples.
Well, the most famous designer of that period, you know, at the time was probably Russell Wright, a man who, in a way, was the Martha Stewart of that era. He was not an architect so much as a designer of linens and kitchen utensils and tabletop design. But he showed Americans the way in which a simpler life could also be a beautiful life. You know, in that period, Americans, middle-class Americans, were still living almost a Victorian life with, you know, they were sort of encumbered by the burdens of a Victorian household and servants and so forth. And he showed them a way to lead a simpler, pared-down, more austere life without the feeling of sacrifice. I mean, one example is that I think he is credited with creating the buffet, with eating in that kind of simpler manner that was pleasurable.
What do you think might be today's equivalent of that?
No, I was afraid you were going to ask me that. I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see who emerges as the Russell Wright of our era. If you look at the designs that have been coming out of Brooklyn over the last, say, 5 years, there are a lot of indications of where we may be headed. There's a lot of very, very simple furniture that it uses innovative, simple, inexpensive materials. I think that's one possibility. At the Milan Furniture Fair over the last, say, year or two, I should explain, the Milan Furniture Fair is an annual event that really goes way beyond furniture. It's called the Furniture Fair, but it really kind of sets the tone for all of design, sets the agenda for architects, graphic designers, et cetera. In the last year or so, you could really see an uptick in interest in pared down, austere design there, particularly the kind of classic design that came out of Scandinavia in the mid-century period. And that, you know, that was, we're talking about Alvar Aalto and a lot of the design that is sold by a company called Artek. And that the kind of genius of that design is that it is extremely stripped down, but it is beautiful. And that's the role that I think designers have to play in this period, is to show the ways in which simple, inexpensive can also be beautiful.
Is that the aesthetic parent of IKEA?
Maybe, yes. Yeah. I mean, there's that, definitely the Scandinavian commonality there. I mean, another example here in the U.S. in the 1940s was the married couple Charles and Ray Eames, whose beautiful designs continue to be enormously popular today and are considered great classics. And they were working at a time of great scarcity, and they created beautiful furniture and product design out of, you know, plywood and resin, you know, which was quite radical then and maybe kind of still radical today.
Michael Cannell, my guest on WNYC, he wrote that article, Design Loves a Depression, in the New York Times Week in Review this weekend. And from that article, I got the impression that you feel that in the last few years, design has become dominated by frivolity and that very little has to do with functionality. Is that how you see it? And is that typical of good times?
I don't know that I can say whether it's typical of good times. I can say that over the last couple of years, 3, 4, 5 years, the design world has become so giddy and overwrought that it really has had that kind of fin de siècle, you know, last days of Rome feeling. In that article in the Week in Review section, I describe a party at the Milan Furniture Fair where the designs were almost entirely unusable, and there was a kind of Vegas-like spectacle with the designer's girlfriend serving drinks, hanging half naked upside down from a chandelier.
And why? Because we may not have been in this scary slide that we've been in the last few months, but, you know, not everybody was living like Bernie Madoff. I mean, there was a lot of wage stagnation in America. There, you know, it wasn't really a time of widespread opulence.
Well, you know, when I went to the Milan Furniture Fair over the last couple of years, and I asked people that question, and you know, I remember one of these 6-hour dinners that one has at that event. I asked somebody, why isn't there more discussion about economics? Why isn't there more discussion about sustainability? And I remember this designer looking at me and saying, the show must go on. And I think that the design world has you know, profited enormously from these good times and was kind of stoking the engine as much as possible. 2 years ago at the Milan Furniture Fair, I literally did not hear the words green or sustainability mentioned or printed once.
So I want to mention your website in connection with that, because your site,
is it thedesignvote.com, which is the sort of flagship of five different sites that are, you know, put together in the same way.
And it's basically a blog in which you ask your readers to vote on whether they like different designs that you post. And a lot of these designs are based on the concept of repurposing materials.
Well, yes. I mean, a couple of designs that are up there now that I posted in the last week are. I think the one that's up there now is a piece of furniture made in Brooklyn that uses scrap material, which I think is a, you know, a coming trend. One of them is a hot tub that is made out of a shipping container. But if you were to go to that site and scroll back, you would see examples of those kinds of things, but many other different things as well.
And you have eco-friendly designs that you're particularly interested in.
Well, my thought about that website was that in this era in which design has become a big business, a very profitable business with very, very sophisticated PR apparatus attached to it, we are often told what we will buy or told what we will like. We are told what the classics of this moment are. And it kind of design has operated very much like fashion as a flavor of the month. And my slightly subversive thought about this website was, you know, let's see what people really think about these designs. Let's let them vote on whether these designs that are handed down to us as instant classics, let's let people decide for themselves whether they like them or not.
So last thing, you seem to believe that design is going to move out of the realm of the personal to some degree in this new era, that design will shift away from consumer products to where the money will be, namely infrastructure like city planning and transit.
Well, let's hope that's the case. I mean, as I mentioned in the article, there was a great deal of talk in the design community after 9/11 about the ways in which the design world was going to make the world safer and better. I don't know to what extent that really happened, but I do think that if there is a new WPA and designers are involved in it, that we could be on the verge of a kind of golden period for design.
And here's a post that came onto our website from someone who says, as a home goods designer, big department stores are telling us no more just for show. What I make has to do more with one or two things, has to do more than one or two things, like coasters you can ride on.
Well, you know, flexibility and multi-purpose is one of the real trends in the design world today. It's not enough to design to create a design that does one thing. People want it to do double duty.
Michael Cannell, former editor of the House and Home section of the New York Times, founder of thedesignvote.com. Don't forget thedesignvote.com. And he wrote that article, Design Loves a Depression, in the Week in Review in the Times last Sunday. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, Daniel Levy from the New America Foundation on the humanitarian crisis as part of the war in Gaza and how to end the war with justice for both sides from his point of view. Stay with us.